Yud Gimel Amid Beis 13b1. We didn't learn for 4 weeks. It's a while.
Right.
Anyway, the Gemara finished off. The last thing the Gemara was discussing was if a person doesn't know Tiv Git and Kedushin, if you don't know the laws of Git or Kedushin, you shouldn't have anything to do with them because you're going to make a mess of the world. The Gemara says it's worse than Dara Mabul. It's worse than everything. Then the Gemara says like this. The Gemara just talk about their sitting and talking. Another time the Chacham were sitting and talking to each other about Rav Asi's teaching. It says, it says in the Mishnah, Ha'ish shehevi chatoso meso, a woman who gave birth, says she has to bring a sin offering. That's the halacha. When a woman gives birth, a yoldus has to bring a sin offering. And before she had a chance to bring it, she died. In those days, people used to die in childbirth or not long after that. So she had an obligation to bring a korban, and she died before she brought it. So the din is, Yavil Yershin Elasa. The children bring the Ola. Okay? In other words, there's two korbanos. There's an Ola and a Chatas. Okay? So the Ola, they have to bring. Amr Aviyuda, Amr Shmuel, but Aviyuda said the name of Shmuel, when do the Yorshim, when do the kids have to bring the korban, Shefri Shatim Mechayim? Only if the woman already designated the korban while she was alive. Avalei Frishat Mechayim, but if she didn't designate the korban while she was alive, then the kids don't have to bring it. Okay? So the Gemara says like this. A woman had to bring a korban Eila. There's nothing to do with Kedushin yet. Okay? A woman had to bring a korban Eila because she gave birth. She didn't bring it yet. She died. So the Mishnah says her kids have to bring it. The heirs have to bring it. Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Shmuel, that's only if she separated the korban while she was alive. Because then there was a korban already. But if not, they don't have to bring it from the estate. So the Gemara says, Alma Kosova, Shibud Elav De'Araisa. This is a Gemara that sounds very simple here, but this is a Gemara which is relevant throughout many, many, many places in Taita. And let me give an introduction to what Shibud De'Araisa or Drabanan means. A person borrows money. This is a typical case. That's why Agmar is a little bit different, Taisu says, but we'll see exactly what the story is. There's a din, if I lend you $1,000. Okay? So we know, I'm elaborating on it because it's a very important din to understand. I lend you $1,000. You owe me $1,000. Not only do you owe me $1,000, but there's a lien on the property. There's a lien on the property. What does that mean?
Is the loan a document?
One second. We're coming there in a second. There's a lien on the property, which means if I have the property, you owe me $1,000. Okay? So any property you own, there's a lien on. That means if I go to you, you have no cash, I go to your property to collect it. What happens if you sold the field to somebody else? If you sold the field to somebody else, the din is, I can go to the buyers and take away the field for them. Because my lien on the property starts from the date of my loan that I lent you the money. So the lien on the property begins from that day, the day of the loan. Even if you sold it. Definitely, if you give it over, the guy died, he gave it over to his kids, for sure, he can go and take away the field. 1 second. So the Gemara says, the halacha is, that's only a documented loan. If the loan was written, with Edim, right, then I can go to the buyers and take away the property. What happens if it was milva bal peh, an oral loan, no written documents, no witnesses. Okay, even if there were two witnesses, but they didn't write a document and sign it, I cannot go to the buyers. That's the halacha. Okay? If it's a documented loan, milva b'ksav, I can go to the buyers. If it's milva b'alpeh, I cannot. What?
I know, but I'm saying why.
Oh, what's the difference? So here you go into an opposite opinion. One opinion says like this. Shibud, the binding of the borrower to the lender, is biblical. And therefore, whether it's an oral loan, a written loan, biblically, I can go to the buyers and take away the field. Doesn't matter. There's a pasuk in Tillim, Eved loiva li'ishmalva. Eved loiva li'ishmalva. The borrower is the slave of the master. That means when I lend you $1,000, every piece of property you own, you are bound to me. Okay? And this opinion says it's biblical.
Wait, the lender is the master.
Right.
That you're saying the borrower is
the master. No. The borrower is the eved of the lender.
Eved of the lender.
Okay. Therefore, biblically, any property you own now will own, whether it's oral loan or written loan, you're bound to me. Therefore, biblically, if you hold shibud de eraisa, that alone, the binding, shibud means the bondage, is biblical. It doesn't matter if it's written or oral, I can go to the buyers and take it away. But the Chachamim came along and said, listen, what do we want from the buyers? If it's a written loan, documented, witnessed, then everybody knows about it. It's public knowledge. It's public record. So the buyer is to blame. The buyer should have checked it out before he bought the field. Right? Because it's public knowledge. It's recorded. People talk about it. Everybody knows about it. Documents with witnesses make a tumult, make a commotion.
Like a lien search.
Yeah. Well, they didn't have...
They
didn't have record. Yeah. Now, so therefore, the Chacham said like this. We understand a written document. Yeah? You go to the buyers. Because biblically, you can always go to the buyers. If it's an oral loan, the Chacham said like this. Biblically, you can go collect the field. But what should we have rachmanis on the buyers? We have pity on the buyers. How are they supposed to know?
Right, exactly.
How are they supposed to know there was a loan? What do you want them to do?
Right.
They're innocent people buying the field. Chacham said, you know what, you can't go. But minatayda, if you'll shibud de'raisa means whether it's written or oral, it doesn't matter, the property is leaned to the lender. That's one way of looking at it. One second. The other way is shibud lav de'raisa. The bondage of the fields is not at all biblical. Which means, biblically, you can't collect from the field of the buyer, whether it was oral or written. You can never go to the buyer. Because there's no lien on the field, biblically. Biblically, there's no lien on the field. If there's no lien on the field, see, if the guy has the field accessible, you take it. But if it's sold, you can't go get it.
Is it biblical, isn't it?
One minute, there's two opinions.
Oh.
One opinion says it's biblical. So therefore, really, you can always collect the field, whether it's written or oral. But the Chacham had pity on the oral loan to let him alone. The other way is just the opposite. Biblically, you can't collect from neither. Right? The Chacham came along and they said, if it's a written loan, you could collect. Why? Otherwise, people are not going to lend money.
Right.
Who's going to want to lend money?
Right.
If there's no, the guy will sell all his fields,
exactly,
and you'll be stuck with nothing. So the benefit of the lender, the Chachamim said, even though biblically you cannot collect from the bought fields, what's called the lukuches, Chachamim said, if it's a written document, you can collect from the buyer. Okay, that is an argument in the Gemara at the end of Bava Basra. That's the foundation.
Curious, what's the compensation to the buyer? Who compensates the buyer for the loss of the field?
Now, the din is, the buyer can buy a field what's called with achrayis or without achrayis.
Is this insurance?
Insurance. That's exactly what it is, insurance. If you bought a field, you sold him the field.
Title insurance.
I don't know what it's called. It's called Hachrayis.
That's the real term. Title insurance came after.
Which means as follows. If he buys a field, he could put in a clause in the document that if the land is taken away from him, he goes back to you and gets the money back or another piece of land. Mm-hmm. Okay? Now, if you buy it without a chrayis, that means tough luck.
Yep.
You're out. Right. No insurance. Yeah? You bought a lemon. Okay. Obviously, people would sell a field cheaper without a chrayis than with a chrayis. Mm-hmm. Obviously, right? But then there's an argument in the Bava Kama between the Meir and the Chachamim if a chrayis is Torah safer or not. Which means, if the document didn't say this insurance, is it considered as if it said it or not? In other words, if it clearly states no insurance, then there's no insurance. If it states clearly insurance, then there's insurance. What happens if it doesn't say either way? So the Chachamim hold a chrayis Torah safer, which means it's a mistake of the scribe, but is there anyway? Uh-huh. And the other opinion says, no, if it doesn't say, it doesn't say. Mm-hmm. That's the compensation the buyer gets. Okay, now, let's go back to our Gemara. What did this din say? If a woman died, the kids have to bring the carbon. Comes along and Rav Yehuda Shmuel says, not only if the woman designated the carbon.
What carbon is this, when she gives birth?
Yeah. Uh-huh. She gave birth, so she has to bring a carbon. So the Mishnah says, if she died before she brought the carbon, the kids have to bring the carbon. Comes along Rav Yehuda Shmuel and says, 1 minute, that's only if she separated it already. But if she didn't separate it, the kids don't have to bring a carbon. So the Gemara says, you see from there that he holds, Shibud is not biblical. Because if Shibud would be, she had a baby, she owes the Beis HaMikdash a carbon. She has a debt. She has a debt to the Beis HaMikdash. Now, does that lien go on her property or not? If the lien goes on her property, so what's the difference if she separated it or not? She has to bring a carbon. And the estate, the kids have the money, the estate has to bring a carbon. The fact that Rav Yehuda Shmuel says that you don't have to bring the carbon if she didn't designate it, shows that he holds there's no lien on the property. Therefore, if she designated it, it's already a carbon. You got to bring it. But if she didn't designate it, there's no lien on the property.
If you don't designate it, it's like you didn't write a document. Is that right? Or no? When you don't designate it, is it like the same as not writing a document?
It doesn't matter. If biblically there's a lien on the property, it doesn't matter if you wrote it or not. So Alma Kosavar, so from here you see that he holds Shibuda Lav Deraisa. It's not biblical. Because if it would be biblical, the kids would have to bring it under all circumstances. Comes along a second opinion. This is what Rav Yehuda Shmuel said. Amar Ravasi, Amar Rabbi Yechonim, but Ravasi said the name of Rabbi Yechonim. No. Af al Gav. Shalei Hefri, Shemechayim. Even though she didn't separate it, the kids have to bring it anyway. Alma Kosavar. So we see that Rabbi Yechonin holds Shibuda Avederais, that Shibuda is biblical. There's a lien on the property. So therefore the kids have to bring the carbon. Right? This is what the Gemara is discussing with Ravasi said. So obviously over here there's an argument between Amar Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel and Amar Ravasi Amar Rabbi Yechonin, whether Shibuda Derais or not. Right? That's what it says here. But the Gemara says, why do we need this argument? We find they argued the same thing in a different place. But why do we have the same argument twice? There's another argument that the same people are arguing. Why? So the Gemara says, Lapliga Bachadazim, that they already argued with that. Once before, Rav and Shmuel Damet Avayel, because Rav and Shmuel both say, in the Gemara B'taka Baba Basra, Milva Balpeh, an oral loan, a verbal loan, ain't a gave him in a yoshin, cannot be collected from the kids. V'leim in alokuchas and not from buyers. Why? Because she buda lav deraisa, right? So if it's an oral law, I mean a verbal loan, oral loan, then you can't collect. Rabbi Yechon and Reish Lakish Hametavayu. Rabbi Yechon and Reish Lakish both say, Milva Baal Peh gave a mina yoshim or bay mina lekuchas. They could go to the buyers and buy because they hold shibud deraisa. So the Gemara asks, why do I need both arguments, both by a korban and by a loan, if it's the same din? What are they arguing? If shibud is biblical, or shibud is rabbinic, yeah? So would they argue by a korban, whether the kids have to bring a korban or not, if she didn't designate it? And they argue by a loan. Why do I need the argument twice? So there's a difference between the two. I couldn't learn out one from the next. So the Gemara says like this: but tzricha need in both cases. The e it may baha, because if it only said by the case of the loans, I would think baha kama Shmuel over there. Shmuel said his din. Why? Mishum dolei milvik silver b'teidahi, because it's not a loan written in the Torah. Meaning like this. If Shmuel only said the din by a loan, that you can't collect from the buyers, I would think by a korban you would be able to collect from the kids. Why? Because that's a biblical law. The obligation of the korban is written in the Torah. That's a written document. Right? Shmuel said, by a loan, if it's verbal, you cannot collect from the buyers. Why? Because it's not written. Right? But I would think that by a korban, the kids would have to bring the korban. Why? Because that obligation is biblically written. It's written in the Chumash. A woman that has a baby has to bring a korban.
But it doesn't say after her death she should still bring it.
No, but if the Torah says she has to bring a korban, then it's a biblical written lien on the property.
And the obligation to pay off debts of the decedent is not a mitzvah?
It is a mitzvah for the yesayimim to pay the debt of the father, but not in all cases. That's the argument over here between Ravasi and basically is there a lien on the property or not. There's two differences also. There's a din, the property the kids inherit from the father, and then there's a mitzvah, what happens if the kids didn't inherit any property from the father? Do they have an obligation to pay the debt anyway? It's two different dinim. If a father owes money, okay, and it's written, then the kids have to pay up the debt. Because the property is linked. If you have a look at a ksuba, when you write the ksuba, you know it says, Achai shtak sufta dein, nidun yadan, is from any property, because shvat erg and nixin de kinyon, this the tres kol shemaya, that I have under the sky, the kanoi that I own, udo osid an olimikne, that I will buy, yeah? And he said, I feel him in gleam of dalkat for even the shirt off his back. In the ksuba, take a text of a ksuba, it says over there, that minyam dinan ula alam from this date and onward. Okay? That's because of this din, by the way.
What does it say? Say that in English again?
I did. In Aramaic. You have to write a document. Mm-hmm. The date in the document.
Yeah.
Why do you have to write a date in the document? A ksuba without a date is not a kosher ksuba.
Sure.
Okay? Sure. No. In order for a legal document, loan document, that doesn't have a time, doesn't have a date, no, you can't collect from the buyers.
Yeah, sure, you never know when it was written.
That's why I'll give you an example. There's a din, predated document, it's called Shtar Mugdam, and Shtar Mu'uchad, post-dated. Predated document is not kosher. That means, let's speak in English terms. If I lent you money in December, okay, and I wrote a document predating it to August 09, Yeah? Mm-hmm. I lent you to the mom in December 09. And I predated it to August 09. For 4 or 5 months earlier, yeah? It's not a kosher document.
Yeah.
Why? Because what are you going to do with the guys that bought land in September? The loan didn't happen till December. When does the lien on the property start? December. But what date does it say? August. That means any guy that bought a field September, October, November, from the document there's a lien on it. But there was really no loan yet, so the lien doesn't start until December. So you're going to go to the buyers wrong. You're going to go collect from the buyers incorrectly. Because there's no lien on the property yet. Right? So it's not a kosher document. If it's post-dated, who cares? If I lend you the money in August and I write December, nobody's going to lose anything by it. The buyers are not going to lose. Because anything they buy in December is taka bound to the loan. So nobody's going to lose anything by it. But the Gemara says like this. There's a difference between the loan and the case of the korban. The korban is considered a written loan. Because the Torah says, in writing, a woman that has a baby needs to bring a korban. That's the document. So therefore you can maybe, that's why the kids would have to bring. But Shmuel said by a loan, they don't have to bring because there's a shibud elav deraisit, because it's an oral loan. A verbal loan doesn't collect from the buyers. So you can't learn out one case from the next. Just because Shmuel said that a verbal loan doesn't collect from the buyers, a verbal loan doesn't mean the case of the woman with the korban, the kids wouldn't have to bring the korban. Because over there it's a written loan. It's written in the Chumash.
I think Gemara doesn't give a simple answer that we do not compare monetary laws to Isurin.
This is monetary. Korban is monetary. It's a financial obligation to bring the korban. You're talking about the ruchnis of the korban. You're talking about a legal monetary obligation. You have to bring a korban. What's the difference? It's not Isur and money.
It's like cherem, right?
So yeah.
It's cherem.
Yeah.
Somebody made an edict to bring a korban and the guy passed away. Kids have to
pay it. It depends if he said neder or nedava.
So what's
she didn't designate the carbon yet. She has to bring a carbon, period. Right. She didn't make the neder, terminator gave it a neder.
Right, so she passed away.
So that's the argument in the world. Does she have to, the kids have to bring or not? But if she put it at Isa, that there's a lien on the property, then the kids have to bring. Right? But over there, it's at least written in the Torah. It's a written obligation. But
is that only if the child lives? The child that you gave birth to?
No, even if it doesn't live, you have to bring the korban.
Either way.
Yeah.
So all the mitzvah in the Torah is shuv of the right hand? It's an obligation for...
Well, the Gemara's not done yet. Yeah, but well, that's the chatas from the Torah. Okay, so then the Gemara says that's that. Then the Gemara goes reverse. The iyashmin and baha, and if it only say that the argument is only by the korban if you have to bring it or not, I would think baha kama Rabbi Yechon by a korban Rabbi Yechon and says that you have to bring it even if she didn't designate it. Why? The milva k'suva b'teira k'suva b'shtai dam, because a milva written in the Torah. Like this obligation is biblical in the Chumash. It's a documented thing. I would think, in the case of the debtor, which is only a verbal loan, I would think he agrees with Shmuel that you cannot collect from the buyers. Tzricha, I need it in both cases. Okay? So the Gemara says, I can't learn out the case of a korban from the case of a verbal loan, because a korban is not a verbal loan. A korban is a biblical loan. Written loan. Because Torah is a document that obligates you to do it. Amar Rav Papa. Now Rav Papa said like this. And this is where a strange thing happens. Hilchos Halacha is Milva Baal Peh gave him an Ayoshim. The law is like in between. And a verbal loan does collect from the kids. Why? Because there's a lien on the property. Vayne gave him an alokuchas, but they don't collect from the buyers. Why not? He said like this. Gave him an ayoshim. You know why they can collect from the kids? Shibudah deraisa. Because shibud is biblical. Why can't they collect from the debtors, from the buyers? The less the call, like we said before, Chacham said, a verbal loan nobody knows about. You push it, have rachmanis on the buyer. Okay? So Papa says like this. Really, shibud deraisa. Really, shibud is biblical. That's why you can go collect from the kids. Because there's a lien on the property. Right? So you have to collect from the kids, the debt. Not by a korban, even by a loan. Right? Even an oral loan, there's still a debt on the property.
How are they going to prove it? They need witnesses.
If they have witnesses, or the guy admits.
Otherwise anybody can come and say,
yeah, sure.
Father owed me money.
Yeah, that's for sure. The guy has to prove it. And he has to swear. Chum made up a rule, you can never collect from orphans without swearing first. Because he gives everybody's going to come and say, your father owed me money, father, how are the kids supposed to know? Huh? Saying if they don't have Adim. If they have Adim that there was a loan,
there's nothing to slow swearing.
Right. No, even then you do. How do you know the father didn't pay back the loan?
There should be a document.
If it's a verbal loan, how do you do? You don't have it. Yeah, if you have Adam, the guy never paid back the loan, then they don't have to swear. There's two issues. Number one, that the father borrowed the money. And secondly, how do you know he didn't pay back?
Adam don't help in case of paying back.
Well, they do. They could if they heard the guy in his deathbed, right before he died, saying, oh yeah, I still owe this guy money, then obviously he didn't pay back. But that's the only case that would you would know that the guy didn't pay back. I'm saying if you don't know that he paid back, then he did pay back.
If they're minors, do they still have to pay?
Yeah, it's still on the estate.
Estate pays.
The estate.
Estate pays.
Yeah. Not the Persian estate.
It's not the estate, but the estate.
Still estate.
But Tesis over here asks a very simple question. The puppy here says Shibud de Raisa. In Babasra, the puppy says Shibud de Lav de Raisa. Tesis is Tema over here. Tema, the Shiliga Pasha, at the end of Babasra, the puppy says himself, Milva Bapet gave him an Yarshim. Why? Not to. To lock doors from the, and he says she would have loved it. I said. So Taisus says like this. Here we're talking about biblical obligations that have nothing to do with lenders. A guy made a vow to the Beis Hamikdash. A guy made erchin over there. Then Taisus says you can hold she would have loved. Because the only reason is not to stop people from lending money. And if you're not going to be able to collect, you won't go lend money. Torah doesn't care about that. Torah will collect anyway. So Taisus differentiates in the context of whether it's really biblical or not really biblical, as far as not wanting to ruin people from collecting money. What?
Title company is usually my real property.
You talk about title company. You didn't have title companies.
Yeah, I know, but it's a lace of color, you know what I mean? Somebody lends money even with a star. It's a star you're holding in your own property.
The Gemara says a statement. The fact that it was a sefer, you went to Besdin, there was a writer, to Adim, people talk. People talk. Three people that were not involved in the loan, right? Three strangers, the two witnesses, and the scribe, the sefer, they wrote the document, yeah? So that's three people that nobody, they talk. And it becomes a public knowledge.
So the buyer was customary to go to a sefer.
The buyer would have to check out with Beis Din or ask around if people, if there's any lien on the property. Even today, when you buy land, you have to know if there's a lien on the property or not. So today, you have a 2 seconds of a computer, you find it out. In those days, there's the Yantis. The local Yantis. What went on? And the people knew what people knew what was going on.
The old time database.
But Milva Baal Peh, the Gemara says, that's what I said before. In practical halacha, there's no difference. There is, but not in this case. Everybody says, from the buyers, if there's a written document, you can collect. And everybody says, from a verbal document, you cannot collect from the buyers. Everybody agrees in the final outcome of the halacha. The only question is it because Shibud is deraisa? So you really collect everything, verbal and written, but the Chachamim had pity on the verbal ones? Or is it the other way, that you can't collect from anybody? The Chachamim had a pity on the lenders, and the Chachamim said, if it's a written document, you can collect. The outcome is the same. That a written document you could collect from the buyers, and in a verbal document you can't. The question is, what's the approach? Is it really minatayr you can collect from both? The Chachamim said verbal not. Or is it minatayr you can't collect from either? And the Torah says, in the case of written, the Chachamim said, in the case of written, we have Rachmanis on the lender. That's the only difference.
So is every mitzvah like the Borban, which is a shibud, according to the...
There is a shibud on the person.
All the mitzvahs.
Right.
Like if somebody pledges to pay to Sedava and he died, children have the obligation.
Yeah. Right.
And Beit Din can collect
There's a very interesting Tesis in Ksubas. Tesis speaks about the Ksuba, in fact. A guy binds himself on the Ksuba money. Right? Now normally I can't sell you something that doesn't exist. Correct? I can't tell you, well, today there's a business called futures and commodities and all that, yeah? Mm-hmm. But in Torah law, that doesn't exist. Okay, only Rav Meir says you can sell davar shelo bo la'olam. But I can't tell you the fruits of a tree that didn't grow yet, right? So Tesis, in the fifth parak of Ksubis at the beginning, asks a very interesting question. How could a man bind himself 200 zuz for the Ksuba if he doesn't have the money? He's binding himself on something that doesn't... The guy's broke. He doesn't have any money now. How can he bind himself on something that doesn't exist? So Taisa has a very interesting statement. Taisa says, when you bind yourself in a document, it's not on the money, it's on you, and you do exist. It's not that the 200 zuz is bound. I'm bound to pay 200 zuz. I exist. So therefore the binding is good. It's a very interesting concept, Taisa says. The shibud is on the husband, not on the money.
And if he doesn't have the money to pay?
But he exists, so therefore it's not something that doesn't exist in the world.
It's a personal obligation.
It's a personal obligation. Not a financial, it becomes a personal obligation.
So if he doesn't have the money, he has to sell himself.
That's what Taisa says, 1 second. Hachmei milvak silvetei nezikin erchen korban, that then shibud eraisim. Because the Torah binds you, so it's a biblical bond.
So, if the husband has the money to pay after he divorces for Kizuba, was it become a slave to pay it?
No, he has to. There's a lien on the property.
Has no property. Has no izani.
So, and if I lend you $1,000 and you go broke and you have no money,
but if it's izani,
there's no bankruptcy in halacha. there is no bankruptcy in halacha. You can't. It's called Peshit Regel in Hebrew. It's Peshit Regel, right?
There is a bankruptcy. It's called, the 50th
year,
the
Shemitah. No, make a
proof. Or could we say he can't divorce his wife because he's out of the
12th? No, he could divorce. That's not a reason. There's a din. If a woman damages somebody. Now, thank God there's no women here. Don't tell anybody. According to halacha, women don't own any money. The women don't listen to the state. Not the Gemara class. Women don't own any money. Everything the woman owns belongs to the husband, right? Okay. So now the din is, what happens if my wife goes and breaks somebody's window? I'm not responsible. I'm not talking about civil law now. In halacha law, I'm not responsible for my wife. She's an adult.
You own her.
The problem is she has no money. So the din is, it's a debt that, God forbid, if the husband dies or divorces her and she gets money, she owes that money.
She does have money?
Well, yeah.
Right. That's right.
Yeah.
Yes.
A man's not responsible for what his wife does.
Right. A minor
is a potter.
One second. When he's...
Not in civil law. Torah law kids don't have to pay.
It's written in the Kesuba that the Mari has to support his wife all the time.
Yeah, but he's not responsible if she damages people.
If she doesn't, she doesn't have money in the case, or she doesn't have money, the Mari has to pay.
Mari and his husband.
I know. But he doesn't have to pay because he didn't break the window. She broke the window. Why should he pay?
I thought that basically, halachically, she, so to speak, belongs to him. She's like a...
She doesn't belong to him.
I'm just saying, once the marriage is consumed, then it's.
She doesn't belong to him. Her, whatever she owns belongs to the husband.
Right, whatever she owns belongs. Right. So yeah, it does not kind of make her him responsible.
No,
for
no.
But if she owns property,
in halacha, if my kid's under bar mitzvah, break somebody's window.
Yeah.
Today in halacha, you have to pay because of government law, dina malchus dina. But in Torah law, if my kid breaks somebody's window, I don't have to pay. Today you do have to pay, because it's civil law. No, it doesn't go against Torah, you have to pay. Okay? But in technical, biblical law, Gemara says, don't ever start up with a mentally retarded, deaf, mute, and a kid. Because if you damage them, you have to pay. And if they damage you, they don't have to pay. The Gemara says, never pick a fight with them. Pigios and Ross, starting up with them is bad meeting. Because if you damage them, you have to pay. If they damage you, they're not responsible for their actions. Mm-hmm. So the father is also not responsible for them.
Mm-hmm. Rabbi.
What?
You say, the ksuba says you own the wife, okay? So she brings property.
Doesn't say in the ksuba, no. The ksuba is the wife's document, not the husband's.
Somebody says that you own the wife, right?
No, it doesn't say you own the wife. You own her property.
You own the property. So she comes from property. You divorce her, you get the property?
No, it depends what. It depends how she brings it into the wedding.
Huh?
It depends how she brings it into the wedding.
Well, if she has property, and you marry her, and you divorce her, you can take the property?
Certain properties, yes. Certain properties, no.
Well, once they're married, the property goes to him. But once he's divorced, it still remains his.
Not necessarily. It depends on nichsim tzim vayv and nichsim milu.
But
that's not fun. Let's go weiter. Weiter.
That's civil law. She will sue you for that.
Wow. Okay. That's this Gemara is over. Next Gemara.
Huh?
In the Mishnah said it then, after the first Mishnah a long time ago said, a woman is acquired with kesef shtar and bia, right? Three ways you acquire a woman. Then the Gemara says, a woman becomes free two ways. Get, or the husband dies. Right? Now the Gemara is going to ask, where in the world in Chumash does it say that if the husband dies, she's free? Maybe not. Maybe she's stuck for life. The Gemara says, okay, nesatzmi v'get, misas abal. The Mishnah said that she acquires herself either with a get, the husband gives her a get, or the death of the husband. So the Gemara says like this, bishlem a get, I know get, it says clearly in the Torah. The cost of la sefer krisis, right? She write her a get and she marries somebody else. Ella misa sabal minolan. How do I know that if the husband dies, a woman goes out free? Maybe not. Where does it say in the Torah that death causes the freedom of the woman? So Gemara says, follow who? It's a logic. Why? Who asra, who sharsa? Who made her forbidden? The husband. There ain't no husband, so she's not forbidden. So Gemara says, no, that doesn't make sense. But all the other forbidden relations, yeah, the husband causes the relatives to become forbidden. Yet when he dies, v'leishara luhu. Okay, right?
Like sister-in-law.
No, like you bring out the bottom. son, previous marriage, his father and nephew, can never marry this girl. Right? If a guy has a son from a previous marriage, mm-hmm. and nothing to do with this woman. Okay? It says in the Chumash, you can't marry your father's wife. Even if it's not your mother. And the din is, even after the father dies, you still can't marry her. So you see, death doesn't permit it. Mm-hmm. He forbid it, mm-hmm. and now he's dead. So you see, that's not a good logic. So Gemara says like this, Ela mida amir achman, the fact that the Torah says, Yivam ha-she'en labanim asura, a woman who's a Yibam, right? So it says, if there's no kids, she cannot marry anybody else until you do Yibam ha-chalitza, right? Which means, if she has kids, and she's a widow, there's no din of Yibam, and she can marry whoever she wants, right? What is it? The Torah says, a woman that the husband dies without kids, she cannot marry anybody else. But if there are kids,
she
could. So you see that death frees her from to be able to marry. So the Gemara says, no. V'dilma, maybe the Torah means like this. Ein labanim, she has no kids. Asura la'alma, she's forbidden for the world, but she's allowed to marry the Yibum. Yesh labanim, what happens if she does have kids? She can't even marry the Yibum. In other words, like this, how do you know, from the case of Yibum, that the woman can marry anybody else? Maybe the Torah means like this. If she dies without kids, she's forbidden for everybody except the brother-in-law, the Yibum.
Oh, yeah.
If she has kids, she's forbidden for everybody, including the brother-in-law. But how do you know death permits a woman to remarry?
If she has kids, she's not forbidden.
Yeah, but the Gemara says maybe she is. How do you know? We're just trying to figure out how do you... Listen, we all know that if a widow can marry, right? The question, where do we find it in Chumash? The one's trying to figure out the source that death permits the woman to remarry.
From Yibum.
So Gemara says, not a good proof. Because maybe by Yibum the din is, if she has no kids, she cannot marry anybody but the Yibum. Maybe if she has kids, she cannot even marry the Yibum, but she can't marry anybody else either. So Gemara says, okay. Mida amel achman, amon elokein godel asura. I'll bring another source. The Torah says, a kohen gadol cannot marry a widow. Right? That means everybody else could. Right? If the Torah says a kohen gadol can't marry a widow, hal kohen hadid, a kohen hadid or anybody else, you're allowed to. So you see clearly that what death permits it. So Gemara says, no, maybe that's not what it means. Dilma le kohen gadol belav. Maybe the kohen gadol is forbidden to marry a widow. It's a negative commandment. Lo kula alma ba'asei. Maybe it means it's only a positive commandment. Why? Because it says in the Chumash, a woman can marry after divorce. Right? A woman could marry after divorce. Which means everybody else, it's a positive mitzvah that you can't marry. Something you have a positive mitzvah, it's negative. It doesn't say clearly in Chumash, you can't marry a widow. No. It says, a woman who's divorced could get married. So there's a positive mitzvah that she could, meaning everybody else can't because of a positive mitzvah. But how do you know anybody else can marry a kohen gadol? Okay, so Gemara says like this. I asked my avidite. So the 1 minute, this mitzvah to say, what's it doing? Either hanemis is about, if death helps, when the husband dies that she can marry, let it be permissive to everybody. Either lay hanemis is about, if the death of the husband doesn't help, then she just stays forbidden. Why do you need a new mitzvah? The Gemara says very simply. If death helps, she can marry everybody. If death doesn't help, then she can't marry anybody. So why are you telling me it goes from a lav to an essay, you know, like a lesser degree of a sin, it doesn't help anyway. Amma, so we see, le'afka b'misa, she can't go out by death. This is what the Gemara is thinking, that to try to figure out why death permits. V'ukme alasa, so therefore you're going to put it on a positive mitzvah, you can't. So Gemara says, I'll show you. The Gemara, so it goes like this. The Gemara is answering that maybe death, she still can't marry anybody else, but maybe it's a lesser sin. In other words, if the husband is alive, it's mamash adultery for her to marry anybody else. If the husband is dead, it's not adultery, but there's a positive mitzvah saying she can't marry. Maybe that's what it is. And the Gemara says, I'll even show you where you have it. Midav psula megdoshim, it's like consecrated animals, karbonis, that became unfit for a korban. Let's say somebody does the consecrates a korban, yeah? And then the korban gets a blemish. So you can't bring it as a korban anymore. But it's still hekdesh. But it's not the same level of hekdesh.
Say that again?
If somebody donates a korban to the Beis HaMikdash, right? As a korban. And then it gets a blemish, and you can't bring it. Right? So it's still holy, but it's not the same level of Kedusha. It goes down a niche. Right? Like if it's a korban is me'ila, and you can't shear the wool of it, you can't use it for work, plakina, but if you redeem psula mikdashim, then there's no din of me'ila, if you misuse hagdish, but you still can't shear it or do work with it. So what do you see from there? The Gemara said, we do see a precedence that something can happen, and it doesn't remain in the same state as before. It goes down a notch. Right? Before you redeemed it, there's a din of me'ila. You redeemed it, there's no me'ila. There's no, you know, misusing hegdish. So you see that it's possible that maybe a woman before the husband dies is forbidden for everybody, lav. And now that the husband died, it's only a positive mitzvah. It's not the same severity. In other words, the Gemara says like this, in simple English. A married woman commits adultery, it's capital punishment. Right? If the husband dies, the Gemara says maybe she cannot marry anybody else. But it's not the same severity of Eishes Ish. She's sinning by marrying somebody else. But it wouldn't be capital punishment.
Especially since
from where do we know, the Gemara is still asking, from where in the world do we know that a widow can be married? It doesn't say anywhere in the Chumash.
You have it in case of a king, the wife can't marry, even after he dies.
No.
The wife of a king cannot get married after he dies.
That doesn't say Chumash, by the way, it's a Mishnah.
It's a Mishnah.
The Mishnah's in heaven, but there is no such pasuk. So getting back to the same place. From where do we know that a widow cannot remarry? I mean that she could marry. Maybe it's not adultery, but how do you know she's allowed to marry? Maybe not. So Gemara says like this. Elamida Amakra, it says like this. In the Chumash it says a guy that gets married, the first year, he doesn't go to war. Right? Free. Kosim. So it says, why? So the pasuk says maybe he'll die and somebody else will marry her.
Oh, yeah.
So,
simple.
So, yeah. Very simple. No, it's not so simple. Elamid amir achman. The fact that pasuk says, panyam is pa'mulchama, lest the guy will die in war. Bishachi yukachet and somebody else will marry her. Obviously, you see from there that she can marry. So Gemara says, no, maybe it means over there the Yibum. How do you know it means a foreigner? Maybe it means a Yibum. So Gemara says, Eima man achi Yibum. Maybe the other guy's a Yibum. So again, you have no proof. So Amar Rav Ashi says like this. Shtei tshuvas bedavar. And this is the Gemara's final answer. He said, there's two answers to your question. Number one, Yavam is not called Acher. Yavam is not called somebody else. Because the Torah says, Yibum is in place of the brother. So if the Torah says somebody else will marry her if the guy dies in war, it doesn't mean the Yibum. Number one. Number two, the Torah says like this. Guy marries a woman, he hates her, divorces her. Right? She goes marry somebody else. If the second guy divorced her or died, she cannot remarry
the first
guy. So it says like this, Sneil Ishachim Kotel of Sefer Kerisus, you write her a get. Or, Ki Yamasha Isha Acharin. or the second husband will die. In the same pasuk, the Torah says the second husband will divorce her or die. Mm. So what do we see?
If what happens?
If a guy marries a woman,
right.
He divorces her,
right.
She marries somebody else.
Right. Second.
If the second guy divorces her or dies,
yes.
She cannot remarry the first husband.
Right?
That's what the Torah says.
Okay.
So in the same pasuk it says, get or death. So we liken get to death and death to get. Just a get permits her, so does death.
There it is.
Af me to shy of a matter. Therefore she, but this is not so simple. Why isn't it so simple? What would be the din? I mentioned this by one of the Monday night classes. Mrs. Eliyahu HaNavi. Eliyahu HaNavi never died. Right? Went up alive to heaven.
No,
there's a guy in the Gemara by the name of Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. The Gemara says never died. He went alive to Gan Eden. He tricked the Malach HaMavos. He jumped into Gan Eden. He never died. So now the Shaila in Halacha is, can Mrs. Eliyahu HaNavi remarry? Or Mrs. Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, can she remarry? And the Gemara says, who cares? In case another guy happens like that. Okay, they're long dead, these people, so it's not an issue. The question is, if somebody else doesn't die, but he's not here. Not because
he's in limbo.
Not because he's captured in Afghanistan.
No, I'm just saying, he's not alive.
He went alive to heaven.
He's not still alive.
The Shilas, can they remarry or not?
That's a problem too, there are no witnesses.
No, Eliyahu, there were witnesses.
There were.
Yeah.
He died physically, so he's not here.
He didn't die physically. Eliyahu went beside Hashemayma. Eliyahu didn't die. So the question is, and this brought down in Ebenezer. It's very interesting. Can they remarry or not? What's the Shaila? The Shaila is similar. I don't see why you can't bring a proof a little bit from this Gemara. But the question is like this. We know when a guy divorces his wife, there's an active act of giving a get, which frees the woman, right? You actively acquired her through kedushin. Now you actively get rid of her through get. That I understand. Conceptually, we know, okay, we learned out a widow can remarry. Death permits, right? Why? Why does death permit a woman to remarry? Is it an active act of dying that permits the woman to marry? Or is it the fact that there's no husband?
The absence of husband in the world.
Is it right. Dying?
In other words, does the act of dying, is that what permits her to marry? Just like the act of get. The act of the get, right? The action of the get permits the woman to remarry. Is the act of dying an active act that allows the woman to remarry? Or is the reason why a widow could remarry is because there's no husband?
It has to be the dying. If it's not, if it's the other way, it could be like somewhere in Afghanistan.
No, because the guy's still alive.
He's still in the world.
You don't know that he died.
Second scenario, he's somewhere not even on the world anymore.
So the question is, so some poskim write she could remarry. Most poskim write Eliyahu HaNavi's wife and Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi's wife could remarry. Why? Because it says by the Israel and Ten Commandments, it says Leisinov. Okay? But it says you're not allowed to live with Eishes Reyacha. You're not allowed to live with the wife of your friend. Right? But if there's no Reyacha, then she can't be Eishes Reyacha. In other words, the question is basically, the fundamental question is that dying permit, we know, the Gemara says clearly, we learn out from the Psukim at the end, you know, either the war or we liken death. Dying permits a woman to remarry. The question is, why does dying permit a woman to remarry? Is it the act of dying that does it? or the fact that there's no husband does it? So they write, Aloch is the fact that there's no husband does it. And therefore, Eliyahu HaNavi is not here, she can remarry.
He could come back any time.
He comes to prison, but not as a physical husband. A spiritual neshama.
But only if they're witnesses, of course.
Otherwise, it's a guna no, like any other
case. But Eliyahu HaNavi is able to come to bodies. We know a lot of stories that he did come to
bodies. But he doesn't come in the Eliyahu HaNavi's body.
The actual body.
Right. The original. He doesn't come in the original body.
Maybe he does.
He doesn't.
How do we know?
That body's much older. No.
He didn't die, even the body didn't die either.
Well, I'm sure his wife didn't get married.
Listen. I don't know if she did or not. It's totally irrelevant. But the question, would she be allowed to?
Yeah.
It's a theoretical discussion, you know. Is she... No, but it's I mean,
how did they come to the decision that he's just not here in this world?
The Pasuk says he went up.
No, I'm just saying, how do we come to the... No, I'm not asking about that. I'm asking about how did the Chachamim derive this halacha that, yes, she could remarry.
Oh, it's a later Pasukim. It's not in the Gemara. It's in Pasukim Shechonot.
So how did they come up with this decision?
Because they say if
what are they based on?
You can't have... Because it's not Eishes Re'acha.
What if the man or woman go through the whole process except process of Yichud?
Of marriage?
Yeah, and then
once he give the ring.
That's it.
That's it.